And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Well, lately we have been talking about the atomic element lithium. Lithium, probably you remember that from grade school chemistry. It was the element Li that was in the upper left-hand corner of that periodic table on your high school science class wall that you never actually paid much attention to. Anyway, lithium's an atomic element. Lithium is important in a climate context because lithium, for reasons we don't need to go into right now, is extremely important for making good batteries for electric vehicles, right? So we want to talk about lithium because we want to talk about electric vehicle batteries, because we're talking about electric vehicles as the target of a lot of climate work. In particular, President Joe Biden has declared that we will resuscitate Detroit by making lots and lots of electric vehicles, which means there's lots and lots of demand for lithium. You've all probably seen President Biden driving the Ford F-150 pickup truck with the electric battery in it. All good stuff, right? Very noble goal to build electric vehicles so that we can get off fossil fuels. That is what you might call the end object of the project. For the Biden administration is to get lots of EVs on the road. It turns out, though, that in order to get all that new lithium for all those batteries we want to build, we have to go mine it somewhere. And that mining, digging into the dirt and digging all this stuff up, is destructive to people and places. It's just, that's a fact of life, right? So the means by which we are going to get to the end goal of having electric vehicles, the means is potentially damaging to places in Nevada and South America where we're going to extract all this lithium. Anyway, we start talking about ends and means, you begin to think of philosophy. And the philosophical question that everyone has asked at some point or another is, does the end justify the means? Right? Does the end of electric vehicles justify the means of damaging mining to get to giving everyone an electric vehicle, right? And of course, we climate hawks are not the first ones to encounter this kind of philosophical conundrum, this problem of, you know, what's the right thing to do? In particular, among many other people, one of the people that faced this question was a guy named Mahatma Gandhi, who was trying to liberate India back in the 1930s and 40s. You may have heard of him. Anyway, Gandhi at some point had a choice of saying, well, let's build an army and shoot at the British bad guys and liberate India that way, or we can go a different path and be nonviolent. And of course, that's what Gandhi's famous for, is his means of nonviolence to liberate India. And Gandhi went so far as to have a philosophy where he began to identify, saying that the ends and the means are the same thing. And all of a sudden, we're off into abstract discussion about philosophical questions, which is why we are honored to have with us someone who actually knows what he's talking about, as opposed to me, when it comes to philosophy. We have Professor Barry Gann, who's Professor Emeritus in Philosophy at St. Bonaventure University. He is the author of a book on nonviolence and has studied Mahatma Gandhi. And we are happy to have him with us to help us lead us out of this philosophical hole I just dug for us. So tell me, Barry, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my great pleasure to be here. Ted, I thank you for inviting me.
That's good. So I just told a little story. I made reference to things that I think I know about in terms of Mahatma Gandhi. Did I set up the question of, you know, does the ends justify the means as a philosophical question? Is that fair? How would you describe it?
You set it up quite correctly. I would just add to what you said by saying that Gandhi looked at means and ends not only in terms of independence of India from Britain, but in every aspect of his life. His goal was to be nonviolent by pursuing the truth, as mm-hmm. he put it. He identified truth with God, God with truth. It was for him, that was a perfect identity. He didn't conceive of God as some being watching over us. He thought that truth is God, God is truth. He said that a number of times. So he thinks that when pursuing ends, if you want to, for example, just let's talk about violence for a moment, because that was a major concern of his life. If you want to be nonviolent, you can't achieve, let's say, peace through violent means. Because if you're trying to achieve a nonviolent end, you're not achieving it by engaging in violence to get there. The one thing you know you're doing is being violent to get there. You can't even be sure that the end you're going to reach is going to be a nonviolent end. So if you can be certain of what you're doing, you need to be certain that what you're doing is pursuing the truth, he thought, and being as nonviolent as possible. For him, being nonviolent meant not engaging in harmful actions toward others. And for him, those others included not only people, but animals, insects, and so forth. So if we talk about electric cars, one thing that's happening when you're driving an electric car, aside from the lithium that you've extracted to drive it, is you're killing bugs by the hundreds, especially on a summer night. You get out of your car at night and you look at it in the morning and you see bugs splattered all over your windshield. Gandhi preferred to walk whenever he could, often to the annoyance of others. He did ride in cars, he did ride in trains, but his preference was always to walk because he thought it was engaging in less violence to do so.
I think most people would probably don't even think of a fly going into your windshield as being a violent thing. But his conception of violence was so, open and broad, right? That he saw this at some level. I mean, it's not the same as killing a person, probably, is it? But in some level, it is. That's just an amazing conception, right?
Yeah. The means by which you get to another place by automobile entails almost necessarily killing a number of insects on your way there.
Interesting.
Sometimes killing mammals by accident or hitting birds and things like that too. Uh-huh. I mean, I've hit a few birds driving. I think I hit a cat once driving and killed it. You feel terrible when you do that. But you're choosing means that if you do that for 30, 40, 50 years, you're going to kill animals, mammals. Mm-hmm. It's just part of it. So Gandhi did not want to judge people for being violent. He didn't think it was possible to live and not be violent, because in order to live, you need to eat. And in order to eat, you even need to kill plants. And Gandhi even avoided trying to kill plants by eating nuts and seeds, which don't entail the killing of plants, and trying to live on that. So he was very serious about means and ends, not just with respect to India's independence from Britain, but with respect to every decision he made throughout his day. Now, he thinks that most people, he recognizes that most people can't live their lives that way, that it's very difficult for us. So he doesn't want to judge us, but he does want us to face the truth and acknowledge what we are doing. When I decide, let's say, to trade in my fossil fuel vehicle and purchase an electric car, that's a decision that I and many others think is going to do something in terms of reducing our negative effects on the environment. And that's probably a good thing. I don't know the comparisons between lithium extraction and all the things that go into production of an electric vehicle versus a fossil fuel vehicle. But I'm willing to bet that on balance, it's probably not as bad as fossil fuel vehicles. And so while Gandhi might not praise that, it's a step away from being violent. Is it nonviolent? No. Why is it not nonviolent? Because we're not willing to expend the energy it takes and the time it takes to walk somewhere, or to invest in public transit, which would be even less violent in the long run than everybody having an electric vehicle.
So Gandhi recognized sort of degrees of nonviolence and this. Did he think that it was possible for a human to truly live in a nonviolent way? I mean, because my background is physics, right? I look, right, everything you do creates entropy. You're using energy all the time. It's almost impossible to exist without interfering with things, right? Did Gandhi think that there was a path? I mean, even as someone as ascetic and able to isolate himself as he was, right? Did he think a human could live a nonviolent life? I never thought about that before.
I don't think he thought that a human could live a perfectly nonviolent life. But he thought that each of us could go much, much further toward a nonviolent life than we typically do.
So, and how would he recognize, forgive me, how would he recognize the path to that nonviolent improvement? Right? So I guess if I could, tell me if I'm wrong, Gandhi would want us to always strive to be more nonviolent, right? In the way we live our life. What were the markers he would look at to say you're making progress?
Well, I mean, he understood violence as doing harm to other things. And what is doing harm? I think of it as if you're doing harm, you're making something worse off. Albert Schweitzer said, we are all life in the midst of life, trying to stay alive. And it's not possible for life in the midst of life to stay alive without taking other life, even if it's just plant life. So it's not possible to be alive as a human being and be perfectly nonviolent. And Gandhi would recognize that. Mm-hmm. But it is possible to live far less violently than we are and than we do. And my own take on this is that the steps you take toward that is first acknowledging what violence is and recognizing it when you see it. And that's something most of us don't do. We think of violence in terms of physical harm, maiming others, dropping bombs, shooting people, breaking arms, things like that.
The kind of thing you see in a movie, right? That's violence in quotation marks. Right,
right. Right. But as I said, driving a car down the road entails killing insects when you do that, every time you do that. Right. I recognize that. Since I've recognized that over the last 20 years or so, I don't feel as good about driving a car. I still drive one.
Do you think that that's a precursor of the idea from sort of ecological research, which I'm by no means an expert in, but the idea that the human is not dominant in any ecosystem, that you have a role to play, or you fit into something, and that to the extent you don't respect the ecological system you're in, you're doing violence. It's at some level, we're using this example of the car killing the bugs, right? Which is one sort of highly specialized one, right? But I mean, right. You're saying, I don't care about the bugs. The bugs, you know, less mosquitoes, right. The happier I am, kind of thing, right? But I mean, that what you're saying is that you should begin to think about that as an act of violence against kind of the planet that we're on, right? Is that fair?
I think that is fair. And when I think about these things in a more cosmic sense, I do believe that the Native Americans, for example, lived a very environmentally conscious sort of life. It doesn't mean that they didn't kill deer and didn't kill bear, but their impact on the environment, their footprint, is far, far less damaging than the footprints we have created over the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, it goes down a whole other path to my mind, the question of just property ownership, which I believe, I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong, was not quite a real concept for the people who lived, who originally owned the land here, right? It was just the land. Everyone owned it. And of course, the pilgrims showed up here in Boston area and started putting up fences. And that was just a foreign idea, right?
Yep. Set up a fort and start buying the place with beads, as Bob Dylan said.
We're talking about, again, dear listener, this whole discussion of nonviolence as part of the ends and means discussion. We're talking about, is it reasonable to extract lithium and destroy, let's just, again, the sage grouse habitat and the lives of tribes in Nevada? Is that fair for those 10,000 people to be, you know, impoverished, for 100 million people to get to drive EVs around? I mean, that's sort of, I mean, how do you scale up to that sort of a discussion? Is there a way to do that?
Right. So, again, back to Gandhi and Gandhi's notion of truth. Uh-huh. He would say one has to inform oneself of what one is doing when one buys an electric vehicle. One has to put oneself in the shoes of, say, Elon Musk, and say, am I willing to pay for this lithium extraction at the expense of this tribe in Nevada, or at the expense, as I read, doing a little research for this podcast, at the expense of thousands of yaks in China who were poisoned by what was extracted. I can't be an industrialist myself. I'm not capable of it because I couldn't make that kind of decision. I'm not willing to build electric cars at those kinds of expenses. I'm not willing to push a tribe around. I'm not willing to pollute an environment where yaks have lived for tens of thousands of years. I'm not willing to do that. And someone might say to me, well, you're not willing to do that, but as a result, the planet and life is going to be destroyed as we know it if we don't do that. And I think the truth is, no, we could choose to live other ways entirely, but we're not choosing to live those ways. That's part of recognizing the truth.
Interesting. I continue down that path, because I think that's an insight that most people will, their spine will straighten up, right? If you hint that somehow the way they're choosing to live their life, or the way they've been culturally presented that they have to live their life, right? I mean, that's a whole other question, but I mean, that's a choice in a sense, right?
It is. And that's why Gandhi wouldn't judge other people, because it's difficult to put in the social environment in which we find ourselves to control the circumstances into which we're born. I live in a house that's heated by natural gas. I've gotten solar panels and trying to switch over to electricity, but I have no idea what was entailed in making those solar panels. I understand there are tremendous environmental costs to making solar panels too, and to building wind farms, tearing down forests and hauling things that probably, you know, these enormous windmills that may not be working in 50 years, and they're just going to sit there probably like a lot of old oil pumps do in my part of the country.
Folding my hands and saying, I hope and pray we're smart enough to take those things down. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's all money.
So again, right? those are choices we make, and they're often in the interest of short-term profit. I'm not sure that before we built electric cars, people looked at the relative costs of the environment. And another thing, lithium is it's a limited resource. I was reading one article again in preparation for this podcast that suggested that we may be out of lithium by 2025. That would be, I mean, even if it's not 2025, if it's 2085 or 2185, then what? And people say, well, progress, we'll have something else. But in the meantime, how much destruction will we be doing? Look at the last year and a half when many of us were quarantined voluntarily or involuntarily because of COVID. I put a total of 5,000 miles on my car in the last year and a half. I normally would put on 20,000 miles. And the quality of my life was not that significantly diminished by my driving 75% less than I usually do. So
I'm with you. I probably am in the same circumstance. I think I was happier not driving around than I was when I was driving around. I guess. So here's a question. Is there a Gandhian take on the idea that the amount of lithium that we have? So let's say that we've got lithium that's been extracted, right? Damage is done, right? Mm-hmm. You could somehow recycle. Reclaim that lithium, which of course is a whole other topic, and keep reusing it. I would guess that you're back to what violence is involved in doing the reclamation of the lithium, but it seems like it is a step in the right direction. It's better than raw mining to do recycling. And I would guess so. That was virtuous from the ends and means perspective, right?
Yeah, I don't know what would be entailed in reclaiming lithium and how much environmental damage we might be doing by doing that, but it would seem that it would be a step in the right direction to be focusing on recycling that.
But from what I hear you saying is that the advice that Gandhi would give us all is to understand what the consequences of your actions are, understand where, you know, have this conception of violence that, you know, we don't want to be harming the trees or the bugs or anything. Maybe you want to maximize your sort of, and that the more you know about that gives you the ability to make choices that are better, right? That you're never going to be perfect, but you're going to make better choices the more you know, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the vast majority of people, not everyone, but the vast, vast majority of people do not engage in violence as a matter of course. Even for people who are notoriously violent, they don't live every moment of their lives being violent. And I think that simply becoming aware of what violence is makes one aware of when one is being violent a little more. Mm-hmm. And when one is more aware of when one is being violent, one is less inclined to behave in that way.
And I think to a point you were touching on there, I think it's important to remember that Gandhi would not necessarily condemn anyone for driving their electric vehicle and killing bugs on the way, right? I mean, that it would not say you're a bad person for doing that, right? He didn't condemn anyone, right? He just said, right, please understand what you're doing and be aware of it, right? And I think that's an important thing, because one of the topics in this whole climate change regime is sort of this philosophical question, maybe someday we can discuss it, of, you know, the personal solar panel on my roof and I'm going to eat less beef, my individual action versus some kind of systemic thing where I'm still participating in a system that's extractive, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people are stuck in that system. And so people are not bad. I mean, I hope I'm not bad, because I'll probably kill a few bugs next time I drive, right? I mean, you're not a bad person, but you begin to understand that you're having consequence. And the more you understand that consequence, the better off you are, right?
Sure, sure. To bring it back around to means and ends, as you began this podcast with, what's important to realize is we often say the end justifies the means, but Gandhi did not believe that. I'll give you a quote that I think I shared with you in a preliminary discussion. Gandhi said, "The means may be likened to a seed, the end to a tree. And there is just the same inviolable connection between the means and the end as there is between the seed and the tree." You know, to take it from Galatians, we reap what we sow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to understand that in pursuing a certain goal, whatever means we're pursuing toward that goal, they need to be justifiable. If they're not justifiable, you're probably doing something you shouldn't be doing.
In fact, I read somewhere that the means you employ to achieve a goal, in some sense, change what the goal is. Is that if you're using evil, again, we're using very strong words, right? But using violent, evil techniques to achieve a noble goal, you're already poisoning that goal. And the thing is different from what you started out with, right? That's a fair statement.
That's a fair statement, but it's really hard to parse out in one's daily life. You really have to think consciously about it all the time.
Really.
And all I can say is, as I've grown older, I'm in my early 70s now, I recognize that I'm a much more violent person than I thought I was when I was in my 40s. Even though I'm probably less violent than the way I was in my 40s, I think of myself as more violent, just because I've become much more aware of what I do and the choices I make to achieve certain ends, often justifying the means because, I'm trying to get to this good thing here. But you can't ever be sure you're going to get to a good thing, because we don't know what other things are going to impact on our actions as we move toward that goal. We don't have control entirely over the ends we seek. We do have control over the means we choose in pursuing those ends. And that's what Gandhi says. You can't control the end. You can control the means. That's why the means are in the end.
I think that's a perfect way to say it, right? Is that the, you can control the end is this ephemeral thing you're chasing, but the thing that you have right in front of you is the means that you're using. And if you guarantee that the means are you get defensible, exactly. Right? Then you're probably on solid ground, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I can't chase a Native American tribe off its land in Nevada in the name of creating a better climate for the earth. I don't know that the better climate for the earth is going to be created by chasing a Native American tribe off their sacred grounds, but I do know I'm chasing a Native American tribe off their sacred grounds, or I do know I'm killing yaks in China.
Yep. Wow. Very interesting. Well, I think that this has been very interesting. I mean, again, it's been a discussion of big topics that I hope will provide new ways for people to think about because this question of lithium in the electric vehicle, it's not the only question. There's probably 150 questions about how this Green New Deal, the energy transition, how this is going to happen in a way that is we can be proud of. We've done the right things, right? So this is just this tiny little peek in, and we've looked through this prism of Gandhian thought, right, as to how does it apply to this lithium thing. We can take it away here in the neighborhood that I'm in. They're talking about clearing 300 or 400 acres of forest land to put up solar panels, right? I mean, I want solar panels, right? But why are we, clearing 400 acres, right? Okay, that's fine. But if we say, well, go put them on top of existing buildings somewhere, well, that's probably going to be some burden on a community that doesn't need more stuff in their town, right? Mm-hmm. But the more we study it, the more we talk about it, the more we think about it, to your point, the sort of violence that we don't even think of as violence, right? This conception of violence that we're interacting with things in ways that aren't good for them. The more we understand that, the better off we are in all of our dealings, right?
Yeah, that's correct, I would say.
Thank you so much for taking the time. This has been fascinating. What I will do is I will put up links to various topics about nonviolence and the Gandhian ends and means and these questions of a just transition to the Green New Deal. That would be on the blog. Let me make sure I get it's the blog. We have active links on the MCAN blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. We'll have the live links to the things we've talked about today. If you have a question about this podcast ideas, if you have a comment on how to save the world, please send it to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to the show on their iPhone using their favorite modern podcast distribution application. Of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts for searching for Mass Climate Action. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support across all kinds of topics. We want to close the way we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan. And that probably means thinking about where the lithium is coming from. A just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Barry, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. It's been fascinating.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, Ted.
That's great. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. Four out.
Very cool.